Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I'm at a point now, because it's been 6 weeks without a day off, and it continues till the 19th of December. I've hit now a point of dizziness. You know, when you actually get that. The other day I did a bit where I just lay on the stage for a moment, and when I got up I did that, whoa!
Like you could have gone to sleep?
No, I just, my inner ear was gone. So
oh
I was like,
God.
Whoa, there we are, that's all right.
You have the, and I mean this with love and slight concern, is you have the look of someone who's got a newborn baby.
Yeah,
which
I know.
I recognise.
I have, I call my little newborn baby, I'm a joke and so are you, available from Atlantic Books.
Oh, we're rolling, fine. We've already started. Hello and welcome to The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror. My name is Sarah Morgan.
Hello, Sarah Morgan. I'm Robin Ince.
I am Robin Ince. Horror
and you are comedy.
I have never done a live one of those before. I don't think I'm going to do it again.
It's hard, isn't it? It's weird.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for doing this. I'm slightly
What I love
concerned.
Is the listeners don't know about this, but the kind of this small individual cages that we each have to prevent the sound bouncing all over the room are very similar as if I'm either visiting you in prison or vice versa, which I presume has probably been observed before.
No, it hasn't. And I would be the first one to think of that. Yeah, it's a bit like Crybaby, isn't it? Where there might be a bit
of a Crybaby,
please, Mr. Jailer. Johnny Depp. Oh, it got sad straight away.
There's so many, aren't there? It's like, I think of, there are certain icons where you go, we really depended on you.
Mm.
See, with Johnny Depp, it was like, I always thought he'd be someone who would be happy with aging. Mm. So first of all, that kicked in where you go, oh, no, it's fine for you to look old, because he always made the coolest choices. He didn't
And all
take
his friends were old and cool. His, all his, like, you know, Andres Thompson and Keith Richards and stuff, but maybe we just know more about people now than we did, and maybe they were terrible people as well. In fact, I'm sure they probably were, but he is, yeah. I just walked past the newsstand outside here and they had that GQ cover where it says outlaw talks. He's like, it's not a fucking outlaw.
No.
He's a bad man.
It's like when you read some of those
brackets,
there's a
allegedly
book, Hellraisers. I forget the name of the author, and it's
Clive
Richard
Barker.
Harris and Peter O'Toole and Oliver
Oh,
Reed.
Not that kind of horror.
Yeah, no. No, we'll get on to that.
Oh, of course
I nearly bought, I suddenly realised I didn't have a copy of Book of Blood 1-3, and I love Clive Barker. In fact, for Halloween, I will be watching Candyman, which I haven't watched for a long time, which is one of my wife's main fears. I'm not allowed to say Candyman any times into a mirror.
Any
so
times.
Yeah, that's.
Okay.
But I'm not here to cover her fears.
Oh, we can.
But yeah, it's and in the book Hellraiser, you kind of. I think in one way you're meant to go, hey, these guys, that's such a great time. Just drinking booze. You know what I mean? And then every now and again, there'll just be this single line where you basically go, I think somewhere along the line, there was regret. There was, hey, there was that time I didn't see my kids for a very long time. There was that time that I don't have any memories of at all. that whole outlaw thing.
Yeah, the dot, dot, dot at the end of a great anecdote. Where you know that some life had to go on after that, so it's like, oh, and then I snorted my dad's ashes in a big line, and then what happened? What did you go home? Did you get a nosebleed? Did you just feel hollow? Did you?
Or at the age of 80, do you just start weeping? Is it in the same way? You know those things that you run out of words or you run out of laughter at the same time? Do you go, I forgot to weep for the previous 80 years, and now the end of my life will be me drowning in just tears.
Or they'll probably be fine.
Yeah, they probably will.
I think it'll be like Mad Men, where all these men that we think are going to have like terrible comeuppance and misery are actually just going to be fine. All the Weinsteins will be fine. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Tell me about your book, Robin.
One of my favourite tell me about a book was when I went straight from the guy before me on this particular daytime TV show was talking about the murder of the guy that he used to work with, who was his friend in Russia. And it was this very kind of dark story of also bravery and tenacity. And literally he ended on something which you really would have thought, man, that's an incredible story. And then Jeremy Vine goes, Robin, you got a book out. And you go, could you make me more mercenary? Could you make make it clearer that I'm here to sell things.
Is it like a, was it like a one show segue?
Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, and it's I suppose, you know, we are a multitude.
Now owling with Stormzy. You're like, yeah. What?
That Mel Brooks was so great when he was on the one show. Did you see that?
I can't remember. What was the... It was
him and Russell Crowe. Right. It was a beautiful dynamic. But Mel Brooks kind of told them off. He said, look, you've got to tell me what my face is meant to look like. I was doing smiling. I thought it was another fun thing. It's a sad thing. You've got to tell me. What am I doing? What am I doing? What's going on with the show? What a man.
Yeah. Oh, he's great.
Well, I've read not all of it, but David Lean's both biography and autobiography, because there's an author who's written a lot of it, and then David Lean comes in with his part of the story. And it's
all like Graham Chapman's autobiography.
Five
writers. It's my favourite autobiography for that reason. Douglas Adams just writes too much about spaceships, and Graham Chapman fires him halfway through. Anyway,
but it's just Mel Brooks comes out of it very well from the period of making The Elephant Man and producing The Elephant Man,
and
Anthony Hopkins doesn't come out so well. Mm. Well, he apparently really didn't take to David Lynch and couldn't believe that this kid idiot was kind of in charge of this movie.
I read that article in Empire.
Wendy Hiller and John Gielgud were all fine.
The voices are here. Mm. Actually, this is a thing. I've been reading your book on the way over. I've been cramming it because, we've talked about this off air. I've been reading Robin's book, which is brilliant and really fascinating, alongside Stormy Daniels' autobiography, and going back and forth between those two things. And the one thing I would say, they're both fascinating, and also both of them, you don't skip the childhoods, which you wouldn't normally do with a memoir. You would just like, you would, yeah, but not both of them. You really want to.
I want to read Stormy Daniels' one now.
It's really. I mean, she's very, very funny. If you follow her on Twitter, she is very funny.
We're watching on Saturday Night Live and stuff. She's great. Yeah, great.
She's got a brilliant sense of humour. She's a superhero. She could change the world because she's immune to the thing that can destroy most humans, which is shame. She's got no shame, so she could bring him down soon, hopefully will. But the book is fascinating because she's really funny. Anyway, I'm not talking about Stormy Daniels' book, but she has a very ghostwriter, I would say. And your book doesn't have penises shaped like Toad from Super Mario Light Brothers.
I did a book event at the Cheltenham Book Festival the other, and my old English teacher was there.
Right.
And I went out for a drink with him afterwards, and I remembered he was a poet as well. And as our English teacher, when of course some of us found his book of poetry, which was published by Faber and Faber, you know, proper, and one of them is called, I think, My Autobiography, and it's an autobiography of his genitalia. So of course, you know, mauve toad with hairy eggs, and of course that's stuck in. And he looked at me when I remembered it. Go, oh, you remember that? I went, of course I remember that, Duncan, because this, you know, for a 16-year-old to arm the, yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. The reason I meant the voices distracted me because I'm reading the book when you talk in the point in the book where you talk about the fact that everyone has voices in their head. I think that's particularly comedians, people of comedy, and you asked a lot of different comedians how the voice in their head manifested themselves, and I found that really interesting.
It's interesting. Well, I did a thing with a couple of Charles Fernahoe, who I interviewed in the book. I did an event with him and Sophie Scott the other day, and apparently some people do have silence, have quite a lot of. He said the inner voices, and I found that interesting because I genuinely don't. It's not me then observing it. It's a bit like when I was the insomniac. People go, do you know what? Actually, quite often people, they think they're not sleeping throughout the night, but actually they keep falling asleep. And right. They go, oh, no, I was fully awake for the whole thing.
Yeah.
I saw the clock. You know, that. In the same way, I wondered, you know, if I observed my voices, are they? But if my voices switch off, it's when they come back on, it's like, what have I just done? What have I done for the last 30 seconds? Where have I been? Well, I've just been walking down the street. You know, it is a kind of hypervigilance thing. And it is. And so they very rarely is the... And every now and again I'll go, oh, you know, as long as I've not been moving anywhere. Maybe I'm just sat on a chair and I lost myself for a moment. And I go, oh, that was nice. But a bit like joy... Excuse me. Sometimes you find joy. When the moment you observe the fact that you're feeling joyous, it can collapse the joy and destroy it.
Well, particularly if you're a writer or a creative, then you start snapshotting it. In the same way that if you experience genuine move, something that's genuinely moving, or a real human feeling, you start sort of getting your phone out to take a picture of it mentally. just to oh, well, remember, oh, that was a good line. When that person broke my heart, they said that really interesting thing. Yeah, or when, yeah. To explain the nature of the book to me, because I've read it, but...
Yeah. I know, it's always a weird thing. I always feel weird about that when I do book podcasts, but it's...
Please tell me about your book, but yes.
It's basically kind of using the comedian as the anatomical model and the anecdotal model for all of humanity. It started from when... I think I'm beginning to realise it comes from various places. Like one of the things that I was originally in the opening of the book, and I don't think is anymore because Jesus Christ, I was changing it as it went to the printer. It was very hard to get it into the size it meant to be and everything. But the originally it started with the night that Robin Williams, we knew of his death I was doing a show in Edinburgh. And what I only realised yesterday when I was doing a gig in Shoreham, my friend Catherine was there, and who would have probably seen my first ever stand-up gig. And I went, how weird. I've just realised the venue where I was when Robin Williams died was actually the venue where I did my first ever stand-up gig. And I'd not until then realised how linked it all was so much. So it started with the cliches that I saw the next day about why Robin Williams killed himself. He's just a funny man, blah, 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 blah. This is the tragic
clown,
thing.
BBC Four Doco, yeah.
And as we know now, there's a lot of other things, including Lewis Boddy's dementia and a lot of stuff he was dealing in the last 2 years of his life. And I think another bit that kind of plays a part in that story is watching Inside Number 9's episode 12 Days of Christine. Which have you seen that?
I have probably the most effeminate observation ever about it. I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, and I also was slightly pulled out of myself by the fact that Sheridan Smith was clearly on board for a few days and has the same nail gels for the whole thing. She kept her nails nice for 12 years.
Oh, but you see, even that will have been, knowing the way that Stephen Reese worked, there's so many things in there.
It's so good. I really loved it. But I made that observation on Facebook, and I think it was David Quantick just went, oh, God, be more of a girl. And it's like, I'm allowed to be a girl.
You are allowed to be.
But also, yes, it was tremendous. And yes, sorry, you watched that.
But yeah, so the revelation at the end there, which, as I said, stop listening for 30 seconds. I'm going to say what happens if you haven't seen it yet, which is that it's a car accident. Nearly made me vomit. I was nearly sick because I mean, I've never had a reaction to anything like that at all. I don't cry very much in real life. I'm more like to cry in movies or listening to music, that kind of thing. Very careful about the way that any emotional outburst, save obviously for anger and joy, which I have no control over. And it's linked to the fact that I was in a car crash when I was 3 years old.
Yes.
So I think it made that, which is a memory that has remained with me for throughout my life. So that plays a part in the book as well, because that's kind of the car crash that I was in when I was 3 years old is what I would describe as my creation myth in terms of in terms of my, you know, how, why did you become a comedian? That's what I could maybe hang it on if I was making some kind of, you know, documentary. So in lots of different ways, what I was using was lots of the cliches within the documentaries about Kenneth Williams or Tony Hancock, Joan Rivers, whoever it might be, and then going through different human foibles. So, first of all, why we become who we become, what we know both scientifically and anecdotally and psychologically, and then imagination, how that works, and then dealing with inner voices and the fact that you can use that creatively and you can become a ventriloquist or use it to make stand-up, or it becomes intrusive and it can destroy your life, and mental health, impulsive thoughts. So taking all of these different things that I've sometimes used in stand-up and other people have used in stand-up, and then opening them up to see what kind of human beings we all are. Because, you know, in the end, you do, you know, cliche upon cliche. I quote Ian Forster's Only Connect, because I think it is the most important thing. I think, you know, when you've done a comedy gig and someone comes up to you and they feel they can express something to you.
Yeah.
And I quite often, I mean, I suppose the things that I get maybe about mental health from people, they may be about loss. Sometimes people come up to me and they just want to, I mean, still one of my favourite ones was Nottingham. Sometimes I'm on stage before the gig starts, so I just think, yeah, you know, avoid the affectation as much as possible. In Nottingham a few years ago, a man came up to me and went, hello Robin, I've come to quite a few of your gigs in Nottingham. I went, oh hello, yeah. He said, I wasn't going to come tonight because I've just been to my mum's funeral, but then I thought, nah, I want a laugh, so no pressure. And you know, that it's nice to have that. And I think the older I've got, I feel that important, you know, the kind of stand-up that I do, you know, of course, first of all, I hope it's entertaining and it's funny, but it's nice if you go, oh, that had some purpose as well. And that's what I hope in the book. I hope the book is kind of interesting to people. And what's nice so far in the reviews that have come out is that people have picked up on the fact that if you're into comedy, like, but hopefully if you're into humanity and understanding humans. And, you know, that was a real struggle to get that down and to... you know, there's lots of more. You know, there's a separate book which I can write now. There's so much that didn't make it in.
I feel like there's a separate book you could write about how to stay sane while promoting this book, because your schedule is making me anxious.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is everyone asking you if you're okay?
Yeah, it's reached that point,
like,
now. As you said,
how many podcasts have you done today?
This is podcast. But to be fair, the other ones are me, so it's my fault. It's like Book Shambles, but I'm in charge of Book Shambles now because Josie gone and had a baby, so she's not around. But yeah, I find it. I'm sure there'll be a point by the 17th of December, which is the day before I stop for 3 days, where I'll go, oh God, I think I've run it. Because I try and change it every night. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the stuff at the moment is me touring my stand-up show as well. But normally it's about four of those a week and three of book shows, or vice versa, or sometimes, you know, a few book shows a day. And I try and make it different every single time. And that was why last night in Shoreham, where I suddenly went, oh, I've just worked out a thing. I've suddenly seen a separate link, which is, you know, at the time when I did my first gig when I was 20 years old in Edinburgh at the Greyfriars Kirk House, I would have been obsessed with Robin Williams still then. You know, I used to be able to do all his monologues from Good Morning Vietnam and stuff. And then I suddenly went, I'd never put that together. 4 years it's taken me to go, oh yeah. And that when I found out he died, that was in the room where I did my first gig.
Wow.
Oh, weird now.
Yeah.
No, I love all that stuff. It's like today, there's been so many great coincidences. There was last night, I met a man who had a voice like Ivor Cutler. Today, a friend of mine came in and went, oh, I was just thinking about Ivor Cutler. And then throughout the day, there's been all of these
If you get a third, there'll be like a think piece.
Yeah.
I always think they all come along like that. It's interesting you saying that there was a whole second book there, because one of the reasons I wanted you to come, obviously you are perfect for coming on the show anytime, but when I was in Edinburgh and you were doing your show, The Satanic Rites of Robin Hicks.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Robin, just how many of them did you do? Just a handful of those shows, didn't
you? I did about 14 in the end, yeah.
Just for fun, in the middle of doing about 15 room, other just for shows, fun, I'm worried about you, Robin. Are you hydrating?
I used to do a couple of years in a row in Edinburgh, I did four shows a day or five shows a day, and then I would do friend shows as well, making about seven. I think one year I did 143 or something. I never normally count, but that year I went, this is ridiculous, and it doesn't take long to count, because I know that I did 70 of my own shows, and then... But it's... What else are you going to do? I mean, I think that's with Edinburgh at the Fringe Festival. People sit around not being able to do anything else because they're so aware of the, you know, the look, the gaze of other people, of critics, of whatever it might be, of their own self-loathing. Yeah. You might as well be on stage preoccupied.
Yes, you can spend 23 hours a day staring up your own arse and then an hour on stage.
Anything for the Scotsman? Anything for the Scotsman? Anything for the Scotsman? 3 stars.
I love stand-up comedians very much, and I am also never going back to Edinburgh during week 3. The show, which I loved, even though it was week 3, was called The Satanic Rites of Robin Hicks, and it was essentially... How did you come? What gave you the idea to do it? And
it was I've been meaning every year I try and do something that happened, and I suddenly went, I've never done a show about. I mean, I used to read out from the Giant Killer Crabs books and stuff like that in the book club show that I did, but I never did one just about my love of horror. And I think one of the things that I've started to do more and more when I do stand up shows, which is see how far you can go without what appeared to be just normal joke structure and stuff like that. So the idea of just standing for an hour and showing the letter that I got from Boris Karloff's widow and chatting about Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, and then doing Christopher Lee's, might I say that, I'm old-fashioned Trey Van Ordinaire, like to fresh Manhattan, that's within copyright, so that should be fine. his drink song from Return of Captain Invincible.
Might I say that I'm old-fashioned Trey Van Ordinaire, that I want a fresh Manhattan with white Anglo-Saxons everywhere, a black Russians, no pink lady, give her the Singapore sling.
And it kind of, I was interested. Every night I was worried. I always worry the whole time. I worry whatever show I'm doing, whether people are happy. I'm worrying, can this be called stand-up? Are people enjoying it enough? You know, it's all. And that show in particular was an interesting one. For the year before, the show I did about art seemed to have the main connection that I made with people. The horror one seemed to just unearth things that people also wanted to talk about.
I'll set the scene for the punter, seeing as it's something that's not going to be good. But I'm a horror fan, although also the nice thing about having a podcast about fear is that I get to admit I'm fucking terrified of the idea of talking to Robin Ince about horror, because I'm a rank amateur. Robin is I love Robin, I love horror. There was a poster, Robin Ince is going to just wang on about horror for an hour, and I got there and it's a tiny little venue. It was full of guys who looked like Vivian from The Young Ones. There was a lot of there was a beautiful giant biker dude and his chick, and you can only describe her as a biker chick, and they sat in the front row, and I'm like, I hope you love them as much as I was.
Such an interesting thing, because the mixture of Radio 4 and the mixture of being kind of niche and slightly kind of outside in some of the things means that, like when I played Newcastle last week at the Stand, just the whole front row was pierced and tattooed and in the best kind of weirdo t-shirts that I love, but also then there'll be the middle-aged couple who've been drawn by Radio 4, but they have, I remember with Josie,
I'm the Venn diagram of those two things, a middle-aged woman in a vampire t-shirt.
But it's great. I mean, that's what I think is interesting, is sometimes you'll be told that you're niche, but actually being niche sometimes means that also in terms of class and age, it's much broader. It's not all. Whenever I play an art centre, they normally go, there's a lot of people we've never had here before.
The whole stage, though, you filled with. And you must have, given how venues work, you do have to arrive with like suitcases.
I left that in the dress. I mean, I brought with me 130 horror books, 80 of which I sent back within, because I thought I can't carry the bloody things back, because I bought more books.
And it was
the charity
everything
shop.
From my childhood. It was Osborne books, vampires, ghosts, demons, and witches. It was Jeff Haunted House there. I was like in spasming looking at this pile of like horror books from my childhood. There was Rick Baker makeup stuff.
Great
and
stuff.
And then on the screen, what was it you were playing? Pages from CFAX?
Yeah, CFAX, ATV, CFAX, Christmas 1983.
What was that for? Because you never explained it.
I was like,
this is creepy as fuck. It's horrifying.
People come in and there's this awful lounge music, which was the lounge music of Oracle, in fact.
I'm glad I got it right for what you were doing, which is just, oh God, it's Sunday, I'm going to lie in my tummy.
It was the sense of waiting. That sense of there's nothing on and then there's something on, so that's what I wanted to kind of, and then I had some some stupid adverts, and then the brilliant music from Deathline, which is such, have you seen Deathline?
No, it's on at the Prince Charles this week, funnily enough, so I might
such
try and get to a matinee.
A great film, and it's from just up from this beautiful studio where we're now, Russell Square Tube, where I got out there the other day late at night, about midnight, and I had a proper like this is where they made. If you don't know Deathline, it is a fascinating film about basically some people who were trapped when there was a kind of cave-in during, I think it's the as far as I remember, the building of the tube. And now the last two surviving members, who are both cannibals with no language whatsoever, say for mind the doors.
It's
amazing. And it's got.
It's one of those ones I feel like I've seen, but I know I haven't.
And you will love it. I mean, I showed it with Rhys Shearsmith, and I did an event at the beautiful Phoenix Cinema, which needs saving in Finchley. I will just mention that. It is under threat. It's a fantastic cinema. And we showed Dead of Night, which, of course, in terms of fear, has Michael Redgrave with his ventriloquist dummy. No. You know, that's the glassy eyes. And then we showed Deathline. And what great projectionists that they, because we showed Dead of Night actually on film. Unfortunately, Deathline, the only film that was left, is basically green now. So they went, look, I'm sorry, we're going to show the DVD. It was fine. But during Dead of Night, the film actually broke.
Oh.
And the two projectionists were upstairs going, come on, feeding it through and trying to sell it, tape it back. And they managed to do it. They said, did you notice anything? I said, no. They said, there might have been a slight jump at one point. The film broke and we managed to, whoa, brilliant.
You wouldn't get that at the Voo, would you?
Nah. It's so, and it's
Cineworld,
a brilliant soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
Very sleazy.
Yes.
In the good way.
An experience in ultimate terror. So fearful that no additional scenes can be shown in this preview.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Julia Rayside, and I'd like to invite you aboard my podcast. Always There is the only podcast to navigate through every single episode in order of the 1980s seafaring soap opera, Howard's Way.
I mean, if we're talking lacquer, we need to go back to Polly, who's got 28 cans of Elmet in
there. It was definitely feeling horrible that you hadn't done your homework.
Yeah. Obviously, Lynn is immediately in a bikini. It's a freezing day in, I'm guessing, February.
I was going to say, that swing pool looks f***ing freezing.
You don't have to love Howard's Way or even remember it. We're going to talk about it anyway, because I think it's brilliant.
Jack still feels very much at sea. I can't help reaching for these puns. I'm so sorry.
No, it's important.
He doesn't really acknowledge how grave...
What an ocean of trouble.
Thank you.
It is.
This is why we got you on. You're bloody
free. That's all I've got. I'm leaving now.
Available from your usual podcast supplier. Find us on Twitter at AlwaysTherePod.
Somebody's nicked my bloody boat.
So the Satanic Rites show, I saw one and I felt like it was the equivalent of when I can't find something in my handbag and I tip it up and it's like some chewing gum or something and I just tip it out and everything falls out. That was what it was like watching you talking about horror. You had an hour and you just kept grabbing books and you kept showing tips. You were showing like public information films, you were showing bits and bits, and it, all that came across is just a man passionately in love with horror, and it was absolutely exhilarating. And did you ever find a structure to it? Or
no,
it just,
I mean, I think what I realised on day two, I realised that there is a structure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is actually, weirdly enough, it fits in with your podcast. At one point, I was going to try and structure it where it was going to be my fear at that age reflected by what I was watching, and then my next fear. So, you know, as I think I did mention a little bit in that show, you know, I'm trying to think of my first fear. My first fear probably would have been something around the car crash I was in when I was three. Mm. So I would have talked about the fact that all my toy cars I used to smash with hammers and see what they would look like. And if I ever managed to get an action man, I would melt his face. So, you know, I had that kind of, like you know, in Female Trouble, where...
now we're talking my language.
Mink Stole, playing Divine's daughter. She plays car crash, but not with toy cars, with a full-size windshield, right? You know, that bit really kind of...
Oh, my God.
That Female Trouble. What, that's a great song as well, isn't it, on that soundtrack? Rabies, nuclear war, you know, all of these things would have been. So each one would have been aged, you know, bullied at school, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But by day two, I thought, well, do you know what? That doesn't fit. That structure doesn't have time to fit into an hour. So I'm never going to bother with structure. So every night I just start and then I stop when the alarm goes off. And then the next act on go, you went over a bit. There's only ever a bit as well, considering how much it could have gone over.
I'm fully prepared for you to just start. Yeah, we are good. This is going to be fun. I'm very excited about this. So, first of all, tell me about your favourite, and I don't even know how we're going to do this, your favourite scary moment from film or TV.
Well, the scariest one, I was trying to work out, you know those things, now one of them will have been, and I watched it just before I did the Satanic Rites show, which was the episode of Survivors, which is about rabies. Now, Survivors was a show, if you don't know, by Terry Nation. It was one of those kind of dystopian things, which was basically there's a scientist who's going around the world and he's got some kind of disease and it pretty much kills off people and the infrastructure collapses. And there was one episode where there was a guy who was foaming at the mouth and he got rabies and it really imprinted, you know, I really, and I talked about it, I think I talked about it in the show, I certainly have talked, that I was so scared of rabies, and also all of the public information films about rabies.
Well, it was huge, wasn't it? It was, there was, because Terry White, editor of Empire, who was on the show a few episodes ago, she was terrified of watership down, for the same reason, that there's the myxomatosis thing in that, and it was never really explained that it was myxomatosis, it was just someone going mad. And again, when we were kids, I remember it's like Cujo and all these things, where it's just like, this was a thing. This was as children, we were apparently meant to be horrified by the idea of, like,
we were
animals foaming
it
at the mouth.
It was everywhere,
for,
you know,
reasons
it was gonna...
we never knew, and it was slightly demonic as well. Anyway, so
I think that
rabies
was probably. I mean, that was the thing.
And you had to be stabbed in the stomach 1,000 times.
You had to have this injection. It was meant to be the most painful injection in the world, and it didn't even cure you. It just did it to you, and you know, and there was the one with the little old lady in the handbag, you know, coming through customs, and they opened the bag, got a bloody kitten in it full of rabies. And then there's a, you know, there was Cat Show cancelled. You know, that was one of, my God, I'd heard there were going to be howling, marauding, demonic dogs, but the Cat Show cancelled? This is not a Britain I ever dreamt of. And then there was the one which was the image of the poor boy on the bed, which I think was genuine footage of a boy writhing with rabies. So all of these things.
Only the English Channel stands between Britain and rabies. And rabies can't reach Britain without human help. If you're bitten by a rabid animal, the treatment which tries to check the disease is long and painful. And it doesn't always work. If the treatment fails and rabies does develop, it kills. So don't let selfish sentimentality tempt you to smuggle any animal back into Britain. Keep rabies out, because rabies kills people.
It's all the jab, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now, of course, the real horror is people who don't vaccinate their kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's man, we won't go into that fear.
No.
I think it probably was. It was Survivors, that episode about rabies. Mm. I was trying to think, the other two were, there was an armchair thriller, which at one point someone looks out of a train window and sees a man who appears to have his eyes pulled out, just like blood socket. That really... And another one was something like an episode of Black Beauty, which just had that moment of looking out of a window onto a dark stable yard, and there was just a figure, and then the figure was gone. Not dissimilar to the way in things like Jonathan Miller's version of Whistle and I'll Come to You. Right. That bit where there's a figure and then the figure is gone.
Yeah.
I think those things in terms of early being terrified...
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, obviously, you've just listed 10,000 things.
Well, rabies. I'll put that as number one, because rabies is the only thing that made me go to my local church and try to commit suicide when I was
what?
A child. Yeah, yeah. I'm
okay.
so scared that when I was nine years old, I was a child that ruminated much. Nothing has changed, sadly, save for the lack of hair. And it was, and I used to, and I found out I'm not the only one. A few people did this. You go, oh my God, I'm so scared, and you hold your breath, thinking that you could kill yourself by holding your breath.
Oh my God.
But of course you can't, because the body's, you know, designed. But it was, and it's interesting, I spoke to a few people who were the same kind of, you know, I was a very anxious child. You know, I mean, it's only very recently that I've realised how much of my life I've created terms for things which are actually just different forms of anxiety. But I think that bit never went. And again, I'm sorry to keep banging on about it, but that moment of, as you'd have read in the book, you know, the car crash I was in, I thought was my fault, and I was 3 years old, and my mum was in
a
coma, and that
toy,
would have been a very long period of time, of course. You know, even a week is huge when you're just about 3 years old. And I think from that point onwards, really, you know, all of the different forms of kind of anxiety and the fear of letting people down, you know, all of that stuff.
Jesus. I find your interests, particularly in that book, fascinating, because obviously I think you use horror in the same way that I use horror, which is like, you're a person of science and therefore don't believe in the supernatural, so supernatural fangs and gore and blood and all that kind of stuff is scary, whereas real life is full of anxiety.
It's exactly, you're right, it's a control thing,
it's
in the same way that stand up
is,
you control the way you're being looked at for 2 hours, and then the other 22 hours that's when the, you know, the neuroses can arrive. But yeah, I think horror has been, and also I think, I mean, I don't know, the night when you came, if I talked about it, I did talk about it in some of the shows. One of the things that I love about a lot of the people that created horror films is they were an introduction to otherness.
Yes, absolutely.
So
yeah.
Ernest Thesiger and the kind of the camp work of James Whale that is so beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, horror is very metaphory, isn't it?
Well, that was like, I know you saw it as well. Yeah. We talked last time I saw you about Little Shop of Horrors, and that was great for introducing. I took my son, my wife and my son, we went to see that in the Regent's Park Open Air Theatre.
Yes, interesting production.
There are things that you can bring up, there are things you can address. You know, the fact that, you know, tragically, the. Howard, I forget his surname now. Alan Menken and Howard.
Oh God, I'm going to kill myself. I can't remember either.
But it was. If you are going to kill yourself, don't do it by holding your breath. It doesn't work. I've already told you
that. Okay, I'll try. I can really be determined.
But it was, you know.
Oh, for God's sake, this is ridiculous. They literally wrote under the...
Little Mermaid. Oh, my God. Fantastic lyricists and writers.
But did you think... Because the thing I loved about the production, obviously they had a drag queen playing Audrey, which is apparently... I didn't realise it was a tradition now, that Audrey 2, the plant, is played by a drag queen.
Yeah, I thought that was new. I thought because the first time I saw it, it was still just the plant singing, a great kind of puppet plant. This one, Vicky Vox, who was fantastic.
Oh, so good. So sexy and seductive and absolutely... The Faustian myth thing, you get it. It's just like, great. it all buys into the, and but the one when we were seeing it with our friends, we were just like, you know what, the dentist needs to be a drag king. There needs to be balance. It needs to be a woman parodying masculinity in the way that the plant is doing because otherwise that character is so awful that you have to apologize for it. Whereas actually, just get a.
But I wonder though whether someone else would then feed into that by turning the dentist into a drag king, whether that would change the idea of the narrative and the brutality. And I'd forgotten how brutal, you know, do you know what I mean?
Oh, it's an appalling character.
But I also wonder, I don't know anything about Busted. So when I saw
it was
him,
Matt
because
Willis
it was
from
played
Busted.
By Matt Willis from Busted, you know, you described it as kind of heteronormative, but I would...
that sounds like me.
We'd all been drinking that night.
Sure. And, well, we were drunk and I was going about things being heteronormative. I mean, this doesn't track at all, Robin.
But it was... because I don't know any of his other work, I think I saw the way that voice I thought was very much like a kind of Jan Warder's voice.
Yeah.
You know, it had that kind of, welcome to the filthiest people alive.
Yes, it was lacking nuts it's the only way I can write. It was lacking balls, and I felt like it was lacking balls deliberately because the character in Little Shop of Horrors, I could go on about this for so long, is an abusive, into sadomasochism, literally a masochist dentist, and clearly a domestic abuser, like a horrible, horrible, horrible character. But also because Audrey isn't stupid, she's attracted to him, so he has to be a bit sexy. You have to get why she would be with this bad boy who's got a steady job, who's a dentist. And I felt like they sort of have to cut the nuts off it to make it more palatable. And it's like, you wouldn't have to do that if you had a really hot drag king in the same way that you had a really hot drag queen playing the plant. I like that you use that opportunity to shove some sushi in your mouth.
I'm having sushi.
You
knew
I
know.
Rant
once you do your heteronormative stuff,
once
I reckon
it's all about.
That's one veggie dumpling, and I'm in. I mean, the greatest, it genuinely is, and I know this is a cliche, but the greatest fear is the loss of my child. That's the greatest fear that I would have, because I. Don't know there's a sense of the love that you get, which that's what I, you know, that genuinely is the of all of the things that for him to be damaged or to, you know, that's the and I think I've always, you know, some ways as well, I mean, that's what I can't remember if you came to the Barry Crimmins gig.
I didn't know. I bought a ticket and I to be supportive, but I wasn't in Edinburgh at the time.
It was very nice you did, because it's great. We made some money for Helen, his wife. But Barry, for those who I won't give you the full story, but watch the film Call Me Lucky.
Mm.
And
Barry had some. Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, and it's a very well. I mean, Bobcat is such a. I think what else is there when you go? You know, I mean, like, one of the greatest fears is what if you didn't. What if something happened and you didn't save your child? Oh, now that God.
Yeah,
I think
I'm being a bit squirmy because I'm like retreating from this conversation. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Right, yeah. But they are, because it's not. I suppose, you know, some of this, you know, like lots of these things. You know, we talk about some funny stuff, and then you have this moment where, and because I remember I talked to a comedian who it was fascinating. He was on the beach and his daughter was out swimming, and suddenly just this tide changed and the weight, and she got picked up.
Oh God,
and. He ran to the sea and swam out and got home and got back. He said the interesting thing is he has no memory of any of that, because obviously that frontal lobe section, which goes, this is me, look at me, I'm in charge of everything, goes, you're not required. This is a kind of genetic thing going on, that love, all of that. And he said, you know, that all of that, it's like no conscious part is involved. Yeah. Fum. But I remember thinking, yeah, what if... What if you... Like, that's what I love about that film, 28 Weeks Later.
Oh,
the sequel,
yeah,
the 28
sequel,
Days
yeah.
Later. You know, the thing at the beginning, what Robert Carlyle does right. is he runs away from his family and he allows them to what he believes will happen. He runs away. And the zombies come in, or whatever you want to call them. I know officially
running,
it's not zombies.
Running infected types,
yeah. And that is, you know, and then he... What happens? What happens when you've done that?
There's that... Are you seen Under the Skin?
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be up there for one of the... Such a brilliant... I love it when someone finds a way of doing a scare in a film that doesn't require special effects and doesn't require... It's just a woman watching as a child is left on a beach to die. The lack of humanity of the person observing.
That's why I stopped watching Black Mirror, was the episode where the award-winning architect... kills everyone.
Yeah.
And she kills a baby. And there was just that point where I just go, you know what? That's okay now. I'm fine for this.
Yeah.
It's why I gave up on The Walking Dead. I'm a big zombie movie fan, even though I don't. I'm one of those people. I remember Kevin Eldon telling me he was in that brilliant version that was done again, Charlie Brooker actually, the one that's kind of set around.
Oh, that was great, yeah. The Dead Set, or it was a Dead Set. Something
yeah,
like
something.
Yeah.
And Kevin said that he's always had an irrational fear of zombies, and he thought he'd get it over and done with by appearing.
Well,
and he said it made it worse.
Yeah. So, yeah, really?
Because I still have. I do that thing that when I'm walking down the street, I think, right, if the zombie apocalypse starts now, where do I go? What do I do? What's the great place? Is that a good building to be in? Would that be a good place to go? Is that a good place to hide?
I read an interview with the thing that made me want to watch The Walking Dead, although I bailed after a few episodes. I just didn't find it that interesting. It was the guy who created it, Robert something.
Yeah.
Name insert here. Robert something. He did an interview and he obviously was asked this question 1,000 times when promoting the thing. It was, what would you do in a zombie apocalypse? And he said he'd blow his brains out with a shotgun.
Well, that is, but
that is exactly.
You know,
I think that
the
is
the guy who was the you know, for the first year and a half, the director who did Shawshank and all that stuff. Yeah, his film The Mist.
Mm.
Now there's a. Have you seen The Mist?
No.
I'm not going to tell you the ending. Put it this way, Stephen King,
because
it's based on his short story. Went, whoa, I don't know if you can go that dark.
What?
Whoa. Mom, Dad, you gotta come see. The butter's so bad. You just gotta come on. Whoa.
Having spoken, the doomsayer departs.
What? Why don't you get Billy dressed? I'll take him into town with him. Hit the store before it gets all bought out.
What's going on?
It's death.
I promise you,
okay,
the
I'm
mist
watch this. Write you down.
Is...
The mist.
It's very well made, because it was basically the... what the hell's his name? The guy who did Shawshank and Green Mile.
Christ.
And I can remember all those, and The Majestic, which is not even one that everyone bloody remembers that he made. But that one, when I saw it, I went, whoa, no. And The Walking Dead, what got me with that is I was carried along for long enough, but it's just the fact that everyone's going to die. And it's the fact that Rick... is, and I mean, you know, it's, you know, oh, my child has been, oh, my wife's been eaten, oh, I've been eaten, oh, I'm just giving up and eat me. And Rick, I'm not sure, is the right leader. So we've had 8 series where there's this episode, the end of one series, where some people who are in a hospital basically go, hey, do you want to live with us? We've got loads of supplies and this is a secure building. No, we're going to keep on walking. And no one goes, do you know what, Rick? I mean, I'm not having a go, but... this is the safest place, yeah. and there's loads of supplies. We went, no, we're walking. What for? Nah, you like walking. We don't like walking. Rick, come on. And again, I think sometimes...
He's gone now, hasn't he? Is that character
No, next series, I think. The one's coming out. But I think also there's a sometimes when you are in a society where you feel things are breaking down, you know, it gets harder to watch those things.
Yeah.
Because you just go...
I mean, I, for myself, I think at the moment, I'm really enjoying angry lady horror films.
Right.
Really fucking Carrie, Witches of Eastwick.
I find it's devil horror films, Devil Rides Out, something like that, Giant Spiders Coming. I think, I mean, I'm always, it's not escapism, but I just love his work so much. I think David Cronenberg still makes, I still think The Fly, The Fly and The Dead Zone are two of my favourite films of all time.
If the future were in your hands.
The daughter's screaming. The house is burning.
Would you change it?
Hurry up, hurry up! It's not too late.
Touch this man's hand, and you are in the grip of the dead zone.
I've had another episode.
Only the imagination of author Stephen King could take you there.
As well. In fact, I reckon if there was one director, I might be wrong about this, so I'm saying now, but I do think... From his early work, from his exploitation, you know, Shivers and Rabid, then into The Brood, which is so fascinating in terms of the birth stuff, these polyps, these Scanners is a great kind of fun horror movie. And then The Dead Zone is so beautiful and sad, and it has a proper emotional punch. There are moments in that film. Have you seen The Dead Zone?
I've seen The Dead Zone.
When it's not Karen Allen, it's Brooke Adam. Brooke Adam and Karen Allen, I imagine, were often up for the same
film. I'm so going to pull the IMDb page up, but I'm not going to.
Brooke Adam, when she
the fact we couldn't remember the director of The Shawshank Redemption.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
I know, isn't it?
Because I can remember all these other bloody films.
Yeah, but if we stopped, if this was a pub and we stopped and we looked it up, then we'd be weak, so let's not.
So we're not going to, we're not going to. But that the moment where she comes round and she's campaigning for Greg Stilson. Why do I remember the fictional name, but I still don't Frank Darabont?
Frank Darabont.
There we are. But she comes around and visits, and they haven't seen each other since their one night where they had sex, because they never had sex yet. And he sees the husband, and she goes out, and as he shuts the door, just turns round, and he leans against the frame. He puts his hand on the door, and you know he is totally broken and so in love.
Aww.
And the little boy comes up, and he goes. And then, when the little boy touches him, boom, you go into the ice. The fact that he mustn't go and play ice hockey because the ice will break.
Aww.
And the speed in which it goes from an incredible.
Yeah.
And it ends. You know, the words, the fire. I love you. You know, it's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful film. And The Fly, I think, has the same thing as well.
In that way. Yeah, I mean,
it's a beautiful love story, and so is The Fly. The Fly is about jealousy. The Fly, if he had not, he's angry and he's drunk because he thinks she's going back to her old boyfriend. That's the reason he does that.
Like, if you took out, that's, I mean, I love a high concept exploration of something remarkably low concept. One of the reasons why Alice Lowe's Prevenge is
isn't it?
God, I love Alice so much. The fact that the question was, isn't it a bit scary when you're pregnant?
Mm.
And she represented that by having, what if your baby started talking to you and telling you to murder everyone? It's such a brilliant, it's so simple and so amazing. And The Fly is the same, where it's just like, how would a man who's a bit of a nerd, who wants the girl and doesn't know how to chatter up, make himself sexier? And you could have a whole film where he goes to the gym and he learns negging and chat up lines and all that stuff, but instead he puts himself in a time travel device because he hates flying. The irony. It's a good film. The Fly.
And one of those ones where people thought it was about so many things it wasn't about. No, because it was the first time that we really knew about HIV and AIDS.
Oh man, yeah, God.
A lot of people thought a bit. You know, Cronenberg, right, so I said it's not. You know, it's about, you know, there's senses of decay. It might be about old age. It might be about a lot of different things.
I liked it when True Blood, when that came out.
No, I never saw that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was really good, but they could not decide what vampires were. If one week they were, one week it was gays, and one week it was AIDS, and one week it was racism, and one week it was, every week the vampires were. You know what we're really talking about here? It's like no, because you've said 10 things.
Yeah. I think one of them, two films that I've never gone back to. One I've mentioned already, which is The Mist, which I won't watch again.
Mm.
It's brilliant.
I'm literally drawing stars around the words The Mist.
The other one that stays with me. Again, I've only watched it once, and then I had to go on stage, and I walked on and went, "Hello, Glasgow, just been watching The Road." So it'll take me a minute to get into it. I think The Road is that combination.
Right.
Is it John Hillcott and Nick Cave's music and Warren Ellis and, you know, based on that format? Mm. But that is, that really, so I think those...
Is there a particular moment that got you?
I think it's literally just looking at the deadness. I think it's as they walk and you see the trees slide and the brief scene with them and Robert Duvall. That sense of who will survive, why keep going? Is there a reason to keep going?
Mm.
And I think that one has stuck with me. I mean, I remember being very put out by Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. I'd watch you mentioning Johnny Depp. When you make a double bill, it was at the Panton Street. God, it was probably... No, I think it was the Odeon Panton Street then. It was after it being a canon. And I went to see Edward Scissorhands followed by Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. And that is too much of a change. That is too... Had I done it the other way around, that's a good... And every now and again, you also get a kind of sadness where, for some reason, My Summer of Love, when I went to see that, which I think is a fantastic film by Pavel Pavlovsky. Is it Pavel Pavlovsky? I think it is. I think he's one. It's, based on, I forget what her name is, the woman who wrote the book. But that isn't because I can watch that film again, but I suddenly had an incredible feeling of the sadness of age.
Mm.
That moment where you kind of go, oh, time has passed and I'm older now. And in fact, I was only then in my early 30s.
Mm.
But I had that... It's not directly connected to the film, and yet it is. Time has gone. I won't get it back. Because one of my favourite funny scares, it's just so brilliantly spooky, is where the guy who had long blonde hair and a little beard looked like a kind of ABBA person who was in the TV series 30-something, plays someone who gets eaten from the inside out by bugs in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. And just
you did not pause for breath for about a minute and a half.
I thought, how much can I create of that?
I could feel your diaphragm about to snap.
I love that bit where Alice Cooper killing someone with a bike when he plays a homeless person.
You've told me about this film before, and
it's one of those annoying John Carpenter films where half of it is fantastic, but it has some quirky fun bits in it which are not required. So it's got a kind of crazy guy. I'm just a kind of crazy guy.
Yeah.
We don't want the crazy guy. We want Donald Pleasance going, "Satan's coming, Satan's darkness is nearly here." That's what we want.
Don't put a hat on a hat.
That's another one. That's another great scene, actually.
There
is a scene, Exorcist 3, the much underrated Exorcist 3,
exactly,
which is
what
a great
film.
The scene involving the nurse, where it's a locked off shot, back and forth, beautiful sound design on it. And I remember showing that, I did a horror show at the Words by the Water book festival. And right at the end I went, I'm just going to show you, like, there's quite a fun thing you've got to watch it really, really carefully. There's a little bit, it's a bit of a blooper from one of the films that I really like, so just watch that. And I put it on and it was just long enough for their whoa and then just and it's great, and it makes no sense. That's part of what's so brilliant about it makes something. I'm a huge fan of William Peter Blatty, because I know I've banged on about this before, but the film Ninth Configuration by William Peter Blatty, there's a great DVD version out now, which has a fantastic commentary by Mark Kermode and William Peter Blatty. And Stacey Keach is brilliant in it. Scott Wilson, who sadly only very recently died, who was played the old farmer in three series of Walking Dead. Wonderful actor in June Bug as well, which is a fantastic, much underrated film. It's Ninth Configuration, not for scariness, but just it's kind of a comedy, and then it's kind of not a comedy, and then it's kind of bleak, and then it's about mental health, and it's about so many different things. It has this fantastic image of Scott Wilson on the moon and Stacey Keach crucified on a cross on the moon. And the first, oh man, ninth configuration, William Peter Blatty, very underrated. And he was a comedy writer initially, so I think that's where the darkness, you know, I did a couple of books called Funny, which were comedians writing horror stories.
I started rereading Encore the other day. It was just sort of there, it like fell off the bookshelf, and I just started flicking through it and reading. Oh God, Kiri Plitchett McLean's one, which is about the Worm Man or something. Which is,
it's really her story, Stuart Lee's story in that. There's all of Alice's stories. Izzy Sooty? I think he's in that volume, as far as I remember. Yeah,
about dating a guy who's clearly abusive, and it's just.
That's what, because I think people thought it was going to kind of be comic, and I don't think they realised that this was the bit where you didn't, like, cause in the first volume I wrote one which was basically just pissing around. I wanted to do something which was gory and ridiculous, and it's kind of a zombie thing. It's where a bloke realises he's the person, his mind is intact but his body is controlled by something primeval, and so it was about loss of control and stuff. And then the second one, which I would certainly change now, but it goes back to children. It's the idea, and I don't know if you've ever had that playing, you know, that moment where you're playing hide and seek and you go, oh, hang on. You're still there, aren't you?
Oh, constant.
The fear of hide and seek, where you're out in a park and you go, what if I can never find them?
If you live in a London, there's a thing when your kid runs off behind a bush that you haven't investigated yet, and you just think, I'll come around and I'll see the child. What if there's something else?
Yeah, it'd be like M, the balloon will go up into the air.
What if there's just... Are you doing anything Halloween-y? It is the season.
I watch a horror movie. Mm-hmm. I think I'm working every single night, though, like I said, till December the 18th, so don't have time to... do anything. I mean, obviously, I'm tremendously excited by watching the live Inside Number 9, I think is on the Sunday before Halloween. Mm. And I've done a couple of Bookshare was the podcast I sometimes do with Josie when she's around. Did one with Jeremy Dyson, and we've done one with Anna Savory. Do you know Anna Savory?
I don't.
She's interesting. She does kind of horror comedy stuff, and she basically inherited 2,000 of Dennis Wheatley's books. Not books he'd written, books from his book collection.
Okay.
I just did a chat with her, and it's amazing because... It was basically like a curse. Her grandmother started just taking people in. This old bookseller went, you can have all my books when I die. And turns out, opens them up, they're all Dennis Wheatley's books. And then her grandmother died, and then her granddad died, and then her dad inherited them, and he died. And now she has them. So it's...
Anna Savory.
And I know Anna Savory. Yeah, she's great. And then every now and again... Yeah, I mean, what I normally do, I may well watch a Sapphire and Steel, because they still work well. Mm. Normally like to watch an M.R. James on a night like that. The original.
Does your child trick or treat?
Does
your brain do the same horror that mine does?
Well, he likes horror even more now. I bought the box set of Tales from the Crypt, all the EC Comics thing. That was for my birthday. I thought, I'll buy something I like. And I got the full set of it. And he read all of them. He loves them. He loves those horror stories.
Hoi hoi, you spooky babies. Sarah here, hello. Just wanted to say that was Robin Ince. He's brilliant. His book, I'm a Joke and So Are You, is available in all good independent bookshops. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, even if you didn't, frankly, I'm very needy. All attention is good attention. At the Fear Podcast, let me know how you're feeling. Honestly, I really like making this podcast. I hate the sound of my own voice. Oh, what an original observation. No one likes the sound of their own voice. But I love making this podcast because it makes me feel less alone and less weird about all the weird shit that I'm scared of. Helps me with my anxiety, so I hope it's helpful for you too. Or you just like spooky horror shit, and if you just like spooky horror shit, that is absolutely fine as well. In fact, I wrote the Halloween episode of Danger Mouse that is on today, Halloween, 31st of October, 6 p.m. on CBBC. If it'll also be on the iPlayer. It's called A Fear to Remember. This is genuinely a career high for me, writing the Halloween episode of Danger Mouse. It's got Miranda Richardson in it. Queenie. from Blackadder. I'm so proud, so happy. Anyway, thank you for listening. Join me next week. There's one more episode left in this series or season. It's a really good interview. But for now, happy Halloween and enjoy Christopher Lee.
Bottoms up, stirrup cup, it'll put you in the pink, and all you have to do is drink, 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 drink.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.